Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Well, hello again, Dad.
Well, hello again there, Tater. You're about snowed in, aren't you?
Yeah, man. We've got about a foot of snow on the ground already. Might have two by tomorrow. I don't know. It looks like it's slowing down, maybe moving out quicker than it was planned on, but...
I don't know. I think there's still more on the way, because it's still going by this direction, and you're back there by the caboose.
Ugh. I need it to not, though. Like, I have a hard time accepting reality when it really interferes with my productivity, and I had things I needed to do today, so I was just in denial. Like, all the warnings that were coming in yesterday about how bad this was going to be, like, well, it won't be that bad, though, because I have to go to the post office, and I have to go pick up supplies, and I have to go get ink, and so it can't be bad because it will throw everything off if it's bad, so it's going to be fine.
Well, you know what they say about that.
What do they say about that?
When mortals make plans, God laughs.
Oh. Well, God is laughing.
He's laughing and snowing all over you.
Yeah, it's a lot. I made one venture out today. Well, I made one failed venture. I was going to pick up an order for ink, and... they emailed me on my way to say, don't bother, we're not there. It's like, okay. But then I went out to the store just to get cat food, and I don't know. Yeah, for you.
Right on cue. That was right on cue. He heard you talking about him and chimed right in.
You have food, dude. I just fed you. He doesn't ever want to be on Still Buff, but he loves making a feature on Neat. I don't know what that is.
I think it's the drinking.
I think so. He's always in his tux. He's always ready for a fancy drink.
Catnip.
Oh, there you go.
Like a nightcap for cats.
A nightcap? Yeah. They have that cat wine. I've never gotten it for him because, I don't know, he's bad at drinking water. I can't imagine trying to get him to drink something else.
He has a drinking problem?
he does, in that he won't physically drink. I have to take his cat food. It's so gross. I have to take his cat food. He already has wet cat food. But then I have to mix it with water and create this side of, like, cat soup.
Cat soup?
That will make him, yeah. He will drink cat soup. He won't drink regular water.
He won't drink mustard, though, huh? Just cat
what?
Soup?
Oh, ha, ha, ha. Yes.
Ah, well, I hope the old nor'easterner blows right on by you so you don't suffer no more ill effects. Arr.
I hope so, too. I hope so. The subways are shut down. The answer you know is bad when they shut the subways down. Those are underground.
Well, at least we have a pandemic so you can keep your face warm.
That's what I was going to say. I had that thought when I was walking to the store. Like, well, this is nice. You know, my face is nice. I'm like, oh, that's a dark, that's a deranged thought.
Well, it is true.
Well, I mean, they are nice. I hope you know what? I think that's just going to be, that's a fashion statement that I'm fine with here to stay for winter months because I don't like a cold nose.
No, you just breathe in your own hot, moist air hovering around your mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds delightful.
I think everybody's dental hygiene has probably gotten a lot better during this pandemic because I know, like, I have to have fresh, brushed teeth before I go behind the mask.
Otherwise, you're only offending yourself.
I know. If you could smell your own breath in your mask, it's just like, I'm not about it. So I brush my teeth. Like, if I leave the house five times in a day, I'm brushing my teeth five times in a day. But, all right. Well, so last week we talked about part one of our Russian vodka. Speaking of cold places, and we're going to get last week was a bit of a bummer. A bit about, like, how the government has used the means of production of alcohol to kind of, you know, take money from its populace, you know, encourage drinking to make more compliant people. Not necessarily fun stuff.
Well, we're going to make up for that, though, now, aren't we?
Yeah, so this week's going to be a little bit more positive. I do think it's always important, you know, that you separate mentally the government's or a country's politics from its people, because rarely do a place's politics represent the make and merit of the people that live there. And I think that, you know, in this case, you kind of get behind the government and you look at the traditions and the culture and the food and the drink. And we really all have so much more in common, you know. Like, we all enjoy good drinks. We all enjoy superstitions and traditions and etiquette that kind of weave us together.
In spite of whatever our government does.
Exactly. I think that, you know, that's where you truly get to know what a people is really about, is in their kitchens and their bars and their restaurants and their gathering places. So with that in mind, let's talk about how Russians today enjoy a drink.
So now you will join us for Russian Vodka Part 2.
Yes.
The Return. I'll be back.
None of that was a Russian accent. Like, at first it was just like a bridge troll, and then it was Schwarzenegger. But that's fine. I don't know if I want accents on the show, but I'll take bridge troll.
I'm the bridge troll guarding the vodka on the other side.
That's sure. Why not? In some countries, drinking culture can vary from place to place. Like, you know, if you take like the bar culture of, I don't know, like New York City and compare it to like, you know, bars in like coastal Florida, it's a very different scene, very different drinks consumed. But in Russia, it's a little bit more unified. You know, you just have similar climates, you have similar palates across the country. So they have a pretty similar drinking culture from, you know, across the country. And much of it, this is still centered on vodka. It's still the most popular spirit in the country. It's important to note that it's not consumed like you would like a glass of wine or a beer with a meal. Vodka is sort of consumed as an event on its own, and it's meant to sort of commemorate something. So when you drink vodka, you need to have a reason to drink vodka. These reasons can vary, you know, maybe something big like a proposal or a birth or a death. Or maybe something small, like a small promotion, a new car, a bad breakup.
It's Tuesday.
Well, exactly. Like, you just got to figure out. I mean, maybe that Tuesday is also like, I don't know, National Cupcake Day or something. Like, actually, a lot of the bars will have special drinking calendars where every day will have something that you can celebrate. And it's specifically to interact with this tradition of you need to have something to drink for. So,
well, in America, we don't need an excuse to drink. We do it even if we don't want to.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, in Russia, it's less about the legitimacy of the reason. And it's more about just, you know, it's kind of an open secret that sometimes the reasons are silly. But coming up with it is part of the fun.
Well, they're traditional. And it's kind of their drinking has a very traditional approach.
Yes. So once you've settled on whatever reason you are drinking, however legitimate or silly it is, that reason is important, not just for beginning to drink, but also because you have to have something to toast to. Toasting is very important, a very common part of Russian vodka drinking. Of course, when we say toasting in Russian, I think a lot of people probably think they know what you say when you toast in Russian. Do you have a guess, Dad?
Nadzdrovi, or zadrovi.
Well, okay, hold on.
That translates to for good health.
Well, here's the thing. So one of those things you said, Nastrovia, which we hear a lot, you see in movies, that is something that a lot of foreigners think means a toast in Russian. And it does mean to health, but it's not used as a toast. It's more used like you're welcome or like not at all. You know, if somebody, if you give somebody something and they thank you, your response would be Nastrovia, like you're welcome, you know. And so it means to your health, but it's not used as a toast. How it got so ingrained in the international understanding of Russian toast, no one really knows. It possibly comes from Vastrovia, which is a kind of a very formal way of saying to your health, but you would have said it at like a fancy dinner or a gathering, and that is still employed sometimes. So it's a different word, slightly different connotation, you know, but could perhaps be where some foreigners heard it and just sort of translated into something that they could say, and that's where we get Nostrovia.
Well, I'd also heard that another popular one is Zadruzba. That means
that's also
for friendship.
Okay, yeah. Well, and that, now that format, za followed by whatever you're toasting to, is the more common, like, that's what you'll encounter. And, you know, it'll be a whole list, whether to friendship, to women, to love, you know, to health. That's what you'll encounter more common. Because it's not like one standard, like, cheers. It's more that you'll specify with that formula what you are toasting to. So they can be very simple like that, just, you know, to friendship, to women, to love. Now, you know, they could, so yeah, so they could be very simple toasts. They can be very complex. There are some like traditional toasts that I found that I'm not going to attempt to say them in the original Russian, but I think the translations are really beautiful. Like, may we suffer as much sorrow as drops of wine we are about to leave in our glass.
Huh.
I think that's very nice. Hmm. Also a good impetus to empty your glass. There's a birthday toast that I thought was lovely, which is, may you never have bitter moments, hear salty jokes, or see sour smiles. Let's drink to the sweet sides of life.
It's, well, nice. That's quite clever.
Yeah. But it does seem that overall, the common advice on toasting, if you're a visitor, is to just ask. Ask what a local favorite toast is, or take the lead of those around you. You know, you're there, you're drinking to something specific. There must be a reason you're drinking. That's the thing that you probably should be toasting to. So just take the lead from your you know, Russian companions. Don't shout out Nostrovia. But before you take that first drink, so you've now toast, but before you imbibe, you should make sure to exhale heavily. Many Russians believe this will help with your inevitable hangover. Don't know the science on that. Don't think there is any, but...
It's their genetics is what it's, we learned last week. That their genetics, that they don't process the alcohol very quickly, so it doesn't build up those chemicals that cause a headache.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not anything related to exhaling heavily before you drink.
Right.
But you, as a non-Russian, you might need any help you can get on that inevitable hangover, because a commonly quoted Russian proverb says not to wait too long between the first and second glass. So you want those two first glasses in quick succession.
Hmm.
And of course, we're talking about, you know, when you drink vodka, as we mentioned last week, like, you don't drink it in Russia with mixers, no vermouth, no olive juice, no Red Bull. It is just cold, clean vodka in a little shot glass or a tumbler, and you consume it quickly. Now that being said, they are not adverse to flavored vodka or infused vodka. These are sometimes called nastoyki, and you'll have brands will have them, but also like a lot of bars will make their own. And you'll find like regular familiar flavors, citrus flavors, fruit flavors, but we'll also get kind of exotic with very savory flavors, black pepper, garlic, you know, like all sorts of different spices. There is a Russian bar, it is no longer in operation. I think it's been closed down for a couple of years, but that I stumbled into with a friend years ago. We were just like in Midtown trying to find a place for lunch, and we had a time limit, so we just needed to get in and get set. And we ended up in this Russian bar that had like 100 different infused vodkas, and they ranged from, you know, like orange, blueberry, to you know, like aloe and chicken.
Chicken?
There was chicken vodka.
I've never heard of chicken vodka.
Yeah, there was chicken and salmon. I will say we didn't get to try those because we tried to order them and the bartender was like, you don't want to try
that. I did see a picture in one of the things I was doing research, and it had all these different bottles of vodka. They had no labels, but they were all different colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's a lot of, like, you know, when we talk about like a lot of infusions that happen, like when you have a professional like infusion like done in a still, it's being infused in the distillation process. So you have your things that you're infusing your vodka with in your in your column still, so it's being evaporated up with the vapors. Most of these you know, bar made or homemade, these nestoiki, they're made by just putting whatever you want in the vodka and letting it infuse. So you'll get the color, you'll get perhaps some plant matter left over, you know, more traditional infusion, but they are a customary thing to drink. So I feel like it here, you know, drinking flavored vodka has a bit of a connotation of like, oh, that's not real drinking. But in Russia, it's not thought of that way.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that they needed to spice it up some, because otherwise it's all going to taste the same.
Well, actually, the tradition for the infusion really comes once again from that bread wine, because, mm-hmm. you know, you would infuse it with these really strong flavors, partially to mask the fact that it wasn't a very refined spirit. So you would kind of cover up the rough edges of that bread wine with these really powerful infusions of, you know, like of black
salmon.
Pepper or garlic
or chicken.
Salmon, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, that bar was a trip. They made you put on, like, they had like a USSR jacket and hat that you had to wear if you sat at the bar. Every chair had one of those over the back of it.
Wow.
It was weird. And it was one of those places where you ordered vodka by the hour. So you could order your flavored vodka by the hour. So you could buy 1 hour of vodka and they would just give you as many shots and as many different kinds as you wanted in that hour.
Wow.
You could order 2 hours of vodka. Or you could order, like, there were deals where you could order 1 hour of vodka, but if you got a small plate, then you could have 2 hours of vodka for the price of one.
Wow. If I win, I'd have to bring 2 friends along to carry me out afterwards.
I think a lot of those were a little lower alcohol because they seemed to have some sort of sweetener in them. But I don't know, actually. We drank a lot of vodka that day. But, yeah, so... But you know, speaking of small plates, food is an essential part of vodka drinking. They are called, the sort of small plates you eat along with drinking are called zakuska.
Zakuska.
Yeah, that's just, you know, this word usage in Russia, I think the word originally comes from Polish, but in usage in Russia, it goes back to the 18th century. And zakuska actually started out referring to breakfast, but then it sort of became more like these cold snacks that you would keep on hand to greet visitors with. So, you know, this is when we obviously didn't have cell phones to let you know exactly when we'll be getting to your house. So if you knew somebody was going to come visit you, but you didn't know exactly when they were going to finally arrive, it made no sense to try to have a hot meal waiting for them. So you would have this array of cold snacks ready to greet your travelers, to greet your friends. And it was customary to do that. So, you know, that was... You know, originally it was like bread and salt, but obviously it has become more elaborate array of things. You know, pickled things like cabbage or cucumbers, salted fish like caviar or salmon, heavy sour cream or mayo-based salads, and smoked meats.
And pickles.
Yeah.
Not just pickled stuff, but pickles themselves. And something called an Olivier salad, although I don't know what an Olivier salad is.
Okay.
I had that in there. But I thought that was strange that they said that the traditional Russian ritual of greeting important guests with bread and salt. Yeah. Here you go. Here's a bun, and here's some salt to put on it. Have at it.
I mean, I'd be pretty happy if I got somebody's house and they just gave me like a nice little piece of bread to munch on.
Well, if they gave me a big piece of bread, I'd be happy.
I think I'd be pretty happy. I you know. Of all the foods, like, pretty, you know, everybody should be happy with this. It's a nice hunk of bread, a little bit of salt. That sounds good for me.
Well, it's also good because they say you're supposed to eat something after each drink, too, because they're wanting you to coat your stomach so you don't get violently ill.
They believe that, like, the food will help the vodka not burn your system. Now, you know, we did an episode a while back on the actual science of hangovers, and, you know, eating food before you drink will do you some good. Eating food as you drink or after, by then you're already kind of done for. So, but this is part of their culture. And you find that at a lot of places, you know. I think America is one of those weird exceptions where eating and drinking at the same time became very separated. But, you know, I prefer if you're going to drink, there should be snacks.
There's a lot of Russians that believe that you should only drink just the traditional Russian vodka, not the flavored kind or anything, that the real tradition calls for just regular. And the famous classic Russian writer Anton Chekhov wrote about drinking vodka and said, "You don't drink vodka right away. No, sir. First, you take a deep breath, wipe your hands, and glance up at the ceiling to demonstrate your indifference. Only then you raise your vodka slowly to your lips, and suddenly, sparks. They fly from your stomach to the furthest reaches of your body."
It's intense. Well, you know, I mean, the vodka is, I don't, it's, no matter how filtered it is, we are talking about ethanol and water, so that's pretty harsh stuff. And I think that the combo of the specific foods you get with it make a lot of sense, because fat, salt, and acid are kind of the perfect things to balance out that hot burn of ethanol.
Yeah.
I mean, especially like acidity and salt, which is kind of the philosophy of a pickleback.
Yeah, and in the bread, too, to soak it up.
Yeah. Now, as you drink vodka, this is some of the etiquette that we've talked about. We talked about, like, Chinese drinking culture and Korean drinking culture, definitely Japanese. So a lot of Asian drinking culture has an emphasis on not serving yourself. It's a little bit looser in Russia. They're not quite as like, etiquette forward as they are in some of these other countries, where it's very frowned upon if you do these things. But it is noted as good etiquette, and that's, if you're going to refill your drink, that's fine, but you should find somebody else to top off along with that, if not the whole crew. But it makes sense, because these rounds are often communal. You know, every time you get a round, you're not sipping on your shot, you're probably downing it, and you're toasting every time. That's important, too.
Yeah.
So if you pour your own drink and just toast to yourself, like, that's not cute. Find somebody to toast to.
and their idea of when you do the toast and you take the drink, you don't just sip a sip out of it, you drink the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's a, and if you don't quite finish your drink, you know, kind of keep that to yourself, get it down as soon as you can. Don't put your half full glass back on the table. That's bad luck.
Hmm.
If you don't finish your drink and you put it back on the table, don't do that. That's bad luck. Now, when you should, in a good night of vodka drinking, you should finish the bottle that you buy. You want to empty the bottle, but you don't want to put that empty bottle back on your table.
Well, does that mean you get haunted or something? Is that like Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary?
You know, it's funny because there are a couple thoughts on where this superstition comes from. And it reminded me a little bit of why we tap the bar. And it's not just in America we do that. There are places in Europe where people tap the bar when you drink, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, well, maybe it's to toast to people that aren't here. Maybe it's to toast to people that have died. And maybe it's to scare away the ghosts that like to hide in the bar that will infect your toast. And that third option, I'm like, where'd that come from? This one has a similar sort of assortment, because it's like, possibly it's because when you put an empty bottle on the table, it will invite spirits to fill the empty bottle and haunt your drinking. I don't know why all these ghosts are just constantly waiting around drinking establishments to sneak into the wood of the bar or sneak into your empty bottle. Ooh, I'm a little ghost. I've got your toast now. I don't know why they're up to that.
I thought maybe you put the bottle on the floor because the rats want to drink the vodka, and then they get drunk and you can kick them out the door.
Well, they're empty bottles, so no, that wouldn't work. Also, no, for many reasons. No, there's also a possible superstition that, like, you know, the empty bottles on the table would bring on a period of poverty or, you know, money troubles, because you've got the emptiness there. But the story that I see quoted a lot and that I first heard is that it actually goes back to the 19th century, when Cossack soldiers drove Napoleon back to France. So they were dining out in Paris, and the soldiers noted that the waiters would calculate their tabs based on the empty bottles they had on their table. So if they put a couple bottles under the table,
they saved on their money.
They get good luck via a smaller tab. Yeah. So that it's lucky, but that's why it's lucky. So they just brought that tradition back to the back to their homeland with them. You know.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So that seems like the most practical possible origin of that.
Sounds like it to me.
But of course, you know, if vodka is not your thing, there are still plenty of other things to imbibe in Russia. In fact, after the sort of the fall of the Soviet Union and the growing awareness in the modern era of this sort of association with like drinking problems in Russia, there's maybe sort of like a bit of shame associated with drinking vodka. Now, it's still the top most popular spirit in Russia, but it did sort of that association along with open borders and access to other things to drink led to a competitive rise of other things in Russia. First and foremost is beer. Beer is second in popularity to vodka. Russian beer is it's categorized by color.
What?
Yeah, so you get like light, red, semi-dark, and dark, and then there's also strong. Now, they also have said, you know, they recognize lagers and porters and that.
Oh,
but
stouts and all that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but they kind of categorize everything just sort of by color is how you know what you like. And there are a lot of like big breweries there. There's, you know, one that I see a lot of over here is Baltica. Baltica's definitely made itself popular stateside. Baltica is one of those beers, is one of the beers that we drank at that Russian bar along with our hour of vodka. We also tried some beer. Now, I did not know, this was many years ago, I did not know what Baltica really was. And this bar just had, their beer menu was just labeled like 2 through 8. Beer 2, beer 3, beer 4, beer 5, beer 6, beer 7, beer 8.
No names like, or no descriptions?
No, and it was all Baltica, but then they just had numbers. And I was so confused by this, and the bartender thought it was very funny that we were confused by this, so he just kept like having us name a random number, and that's the beer that we got. Would get not describe it to us at all. But now I understand that's how Baltica actually does sell their beers. Like there's Baltica number 2, which is a pale lager. There's Baltica number 4, which is a dark lager. Baltica 6, which is a porter. Oh. Baltica 7, which is... That's a pale lager too, and then like 8 is a wheat. So there's not any rhyme or reason. Like some people, I think there was a thought that it was higher alcohol the higher number you go, but that's not exactly true. There are lower alcohol beers higher in the numbers. You know, they don't get darker as they go because there's a lager at 7, and you know, it's just how they organize them.
At a young age, Russians learn what number they love, and they just order that number from then on.
I think 3 is the popular one. I think 3 is the one that's most popular. That's one of those pale lagers. But I don't know. I had that experience at that bar, and I'd never understood why their beer was just numbers and not names. And then I later was informed, oh, no, you were drinking Baltica. And that's literally the name, Baltica 4, Baltica 2, Baltica 3. So there's that. It's a very confusing system.
Yeah, that'd be a real kick in the Baltica.
Yeah. Okay. Now, along with these like bigger breweries, there is a growing movement of a small craft beer in Russia. So that's cool.
Yeah.
And wine is also increasingly popular in Russia, both imported from like prominent neighboring wine regions. Like there's a lot of Georgian wine in Russia, but also Russia itself, mainly in the south, has an increasing number of wineries. Now, you know, because Russia has a very cold climate, mainly the wines you get from colder climates are a little sweeter. The grapes grow sort of more concentrated sweetness in there. And so like 85% of the wines on the Russian market are semi-sweet and sweet wines. Similar to that, like there's a very popular wine that you'll find in Russia. It's actually it's a port and it's Crimean and it's called Massandra. So, you know, like your wine drinking, they have all types of wine in Russia, but it seems like the palate, the popularity, tends towards sweeter wines, more dessert-style wines.
Well, that's kind of like they said, a lot of the normal cuisine in Russia lends itself to drinking vodka with it. That fits with the meal. So
yeah.
So I imagine they're doing the same thing with their wines.
Well, and if you like bubbles... They do have champagne in Russia, sort of. You can't have champagne outside of Champagne region of France, but there is Soviet champagne is sort of the nickname for it and was once the official name. So their sparkling wine was created during the Soviet Union. Basically, the government issued a decree to winemakers to make a sparkling wine for the people. They wanted something cheap. They wanted it quick to produce. They wanted something accessible by the everyman.
And bubbly. And bubbly.
Yes, and bubbly. So this was launched in 1928, and it was Soviet champagne. And was an accessible sparkling wine for the people. And popular enough that it survived the fall of the USSR. It still is around today, albeit slightly renamed, because now they can't call it champagne anymore without stepping on some French toes.
French toast?
French toes.
Oh.
Yes, they don't want to step on French toast. That sounds sticky.
Soviet bubbly.
Well, that's Soviet champagne. Well, you know, and it makes sense, because I remember, like, reading that champagne was popular in Russia, and that surprised me. But now it's that there was this culture behind drinking this, you know, this specific method of production of sparkling wine. And actually, it's, you know, the method's not anything to laugh at. It was actually Moët purchased the rights to make their own champagne or sparkling wine using this method because they were intrigued by it. So,
wow,
it's a legit style. Now, if you want another sort of traditional Russian spirit, there's a sort of a Russian mead that is increasingly popular. It's called Medovka.
Well, that back centuries ago, that was the most popular drink in Russia. Vodka wasn't really available, wasn't being made yet, and that mead, honey wine, was what they drank for centuries until... it just became too expensive to do that. The grain made it easier to make vodka and stuff like that. And then a lot of the historical recipes for the mead had kind of fallen by the wayside, and they didn't write them down. So they didn't know how they did it when they decided they wanted to try to do it again.
But they are figuring it out. And it's kind of a cool, you know, young movement of making this Russian mead. And it sounds cool because a lot of the mead that I've tried, it's, you know, it's young wine, but their style specifically is aged anywhere from like 15 to 50 years in a barrel. So I'd be down to try some of that.
They're going to have to find a mosquito that's encased in amber, and maybe they can get the DNA out of it for the to make the mead again, huh?
I don't know if that's how recipes work. I don't know.
It worked for Jurassic Park.
Yeah, well, they're not trying to make dinosaurs, Dad. They should have, when they were so busy trying to figure out if they could do it, they never asked if they should do it. I think for like cool old honey wine, that's fine. You can do that. Don't make dinosaurs. Do make wine. but that's sort of that's a bit of a rundown of like modern drinking in Russia. You've got a bit about...
Well, the New Year celebration, evidently I came across this article. It was written by someone from Russia, and it's called Drinking on the New Year in Russia. And that's the peak of alcohol consumption is the New Year's Eve celebration. And they said that the actual New Year celebration was formed during the Soviet era, that this is when it all was kind of formalized. And it said, to prepare for a Russian-style New York celebration, you should perform the following steps. Buy sparkling wine, preferably Soviet champagne, and mandarins.
Mandarins.
Mandarins. Prepare Olivier salad and optional main dishes and vodka to continue the celebration. Decorate your Christmas tree and gather your friends and relatives at the table. I don't know why you wouldn't already have your Christmas tree decorated. This is their New Year celebration.
I don't want to misspeak, but I do think that there is something. I think that the Christmas holiday is separated at a slightly different timeline.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it says, watch the 1976 movie, The Irony of Fate. Yes, you watched this in the previous year and the year before that and the year before that. But you will watch it again this year because that is what tradition demands. And most Russian families do so.
So it's like their It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, or to me, Christmas Vacation.
Right.
Now, here's the way that you do the New Year's. 5 minutes prior to midnight, all the main channels will start broadcasting the president's New Year address to the people. 30 seconds before midnight, the address will end, and all the channels will show an image of the massive clock on Spassskaya Tower of the Moscow of... in Moscow at the Kremlin, counting down all of Russia from the old year to the new one, and at midnight it will start playing the hymn of Russia, Everybody should stand with a glass of sparkling wine in hand, propose a toast for the new year to be better than the old one, and clink glasses with each other, then drink to the bottom.
Well, that sounds nice.
So that's kind of like their ball drop.
Yeah.
They go to that clock that's on the Kremlin in Moscow.
They got a big clock.
Yeah. And now here's the drawback, though. That all sounds nice, and that would be a great one-night celebration. The drawback is the Russian New Year celebration actually goes on for 2 weeks. It used to end on January 9th, but apparently that kind of, I mean, by the time you've already been at it for 9 days, why not make it 2 weeks? I mean, what's 9 days? So they've extended it to January 13th now.
Oh, and happy birthday to me.
Yeah, there you go. They extended it to your birthday. That might have been why. So the Russian New Year celebration goes on for 2 weeks. Economists estimate that the Russian GDP misses out on about 1 trillion rubles as a result of this extended holiday. But it's a time that Russians hold dear. One expert estimated that if all the bottles of alcohol that Russians drank over that holiday were lined up along the equator, they would wrap around the world 17 times. That's how much is drank during that. It said a guy doing medical research went further, estimating the Russians with a total population of 142 million drank more than 1.5 billion liters of alcohol over the holiday, including 100 million bottles of beer, 100 million bottles of champagne, 250 million bottles of vodka, and add to that 80 million bottles of wine and 10 million bottles of cognac and 1.5 million bottles of other drinks such as rum, gin, tequila, and whiskey.
Well, bam.
They really know how to party. They throw a two-week party and they party down.
I guess so. Well, you know, not to make it a bummer, but I do think you can't overemphasize that there is a real problem in Russia that they grapple with when it comes to drinking. You know, it's a leading cause of death and disease to a degree that some have called it like a serious humanitarian crisis with a rather uncertain future. But something so tied to its culture and also that offers so much, that's so beloved in its traditions and its superstitions and, you know, its etiquette. Like, can you really separate the two? I think, you know, you can both, that I don't think it's mutually exclusive to say, okay, you know, maybe this country has a bit too much of a dependence on drinking, but also to say there's a beautiful, lively, rich culture around drinking.
Yeah. And you know, it's, everything is like, you know, just because it's a stereotypical type thing, you know, that a lot of times people make that judgment, because if it averages out to that, that means there's as many that don't drink to excess as do, you know, if you're going to do that, the stereotype usually falls somewhere in the middle or is an exaggeration. So, you know, I'm it's not like everybody in the country runs around drunk, you know.
No. Well, and I think
we're not saying that.
No. And that I think that there is evidence that things are changing. You know, I think that as other forms of drinking become popular, things that maybe, you know, provide a bit more of an experience in and of themselves, so you can drink less of them, or, you know, they're more enjoyable and they're lower alcohol. I mean, I think we saw the same thing in American drinking. I mean, you know, now we have such an emphasis on craft spirits and sort of, you know, respecting the spirit itself and imbibing things that have a sort of love put into them. And I think that with like craft meaderies and craft wineries and breweries opening in Russia, that, you know, that there's clearly a younger generation that's taking control of these things and making them more of a, you know, a special experience and, you know, creating businesses out of them. So I think that's really an important counterpoint to that sort of, you know, overstated stereotype.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of beautiful culture there, a lot of beautiful tradition. And then, you know, there's also a history of the government trying to encourage a lot of drinking. So, you know, you've just hopefully move forward with the part of your culture that you want to keep and let go of the things that have hurt your people.
Hey, they were ingrained. If you're going to be a good citizen, drink vodka. Yeah. It helps your country.
But I do think it's really a rich culture of drinking. And I don't know if I I was going to say, I would love to go to Russia and drink. I don't think Russia wants me there so much, but.
Well, I like pickles and bread and salt, so that would be all right. I could like that part.
Yeah. I think I like anything that allows me to drink with snacks. Any culture that makes snacks important.
That's right.
I'm a fan of that.
And toasting. How much do we drink in places? And we don't toast anybody. We just drink our damn drink. We don't toast. You know, at least they're polite about it and include others.
I want one of those calendars that has something to celebrate every day. That's what I want. I do kind of feel like there must be one of those out there. It must not just be a Russian thing, because I always see randomly on like social media, like, today's National Corn Dog Day. Eat a corn dog. I'm like, who decided that?
Oh, someday there's so many national things. You have two or three things on the same day.
Well,
they got more things than they got days.
Well, I want to know. I want to, because then, you know, then if you have that excuse every day, I feel like that's what it comes down to. You know, oh, it's national grilled cheese day. I guess I have to eat a grilled cheese today. I was going to eat a salad, but it's grilled cheese day.
National Baskin Robbins Day. I'm going to get ice cream.
Yeah. Ice cream day exists. Well, all right. Well, there's our little rundown of Russian vodka drinking culture and history. I think a
topic so big it took two episodes.
Yes, and really, really fascinating stuff there. So thanks again to Austin for asking such a great question that led to so much really fascinating research. And of course, if you are listening and you have a question, if you are one of our patrons on our Patreon, just message the Patreon your question, and if it's big enough for an episode, we will turn it into an episode. If we get a couple, like, you know, easier answer questions, we'll do another Q&A episode. So it's been a while since we've done one of those. We can do one of those soon, but yeah.
Yep. Write into us on Facebook. We got people writing some things in here and there and showing some shrubs that they made and other cocktails they mixed up, and we love to see Tater's advice put to work.
and of course, if you want to find us on any other form of social media, we are on Twitter, we are on Instagram at Neat Boozecast, and we did some just kind of basic drinks last week on the video. I want to do something with some infused vodka this week. Might be fun, but come up with something fun.
Do I need to fry some chicken?
You know what? If you want to make chicken vodka.
Don't want to.
The reason that I wanted to try it was, this was back before I was vegan. I just wanted to understand how it was made, because in my mind it was raw chicken. I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it was... it was cooked chicken, but chicken tastes like nothing. And I guess so does vodka. I don't know. I don't know what the goal was there. I think you could take like fried chicken skin and do like a fat wash on a spirit. That would work really well.
That just sounds delicious, doing a fat wash.
Fat washing is delicious. You did a fat wash. That's what you did when you made the buttered popcorn bourbon. Yeah,
I'm glad you didn't tell me that's what it was. That doesn't sound very delectable.
Well, it's just that's what the technique is called. And I do agree. I don't like the name for it, but it is what you're doing. You infuse a spirit with a fat. It's called fat washing.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll come up with something cool. I got a couple days to figure out the video, so check it out there this weekend. And thank you, of course, for joining us. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Taylor, for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jack, for voicing your meow earlier today. He's just staring at me. All right. I've been Taylor Smurl.
And I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Meat! I've got to find out what an Olivier salad is. I wonder if that was named after Sir Lawrence Olivier. He wasn't Russian, though.
Probably was, then. We'll be right back.
pretty interesting was, I think it's got to look through it too. It's probably not just piled in there. It's probably arranged very neat.
Entirely off of the name? You're just imagining in your head?
Yeah, I'm just thinking up. If I was an Olivier salad, what would I look like?
It's probably just like mayo and stuff.
And with a straw in it?
Why would it have a straw in it?
Mayo with a straw in it?
No, why would it
just
have a
suck
straw?
It up so you
Ew.
Can suck it up?
No. I hate this.
It'd be a fat wash.
I hate that video. That's not a fat wash at all. Don't fat wash your insides.